This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
When you post hunting photos on Instagram, they get censored. When you post on Go Wild, you get virtual fist bumps from fellow hunters. When you buy gear on Amazon, you gas up a billionaire spaceship. When you buy gear on Go Wild, we donate to a camp that teaches kids to hunt, fish, and shoot. See the difference? Go Wild is a free social community built by hunters for hunters. Join today at downloadgowild.com, and I'll give you $10 just for setting up your account. And you'll keep unlocking Go Wild rewards as you share content, because guess what? We like hunting pictures. Join at downloadgowild.com or in the App Store.
Hey guys and gals, welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoor Podcast, where you will be educated, entertained, and equipped to get more out of your outdoor experience. So hold on tight, because here we go. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. This is the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast, and I am your host, John Hudspeth. If this is your first time listening, welcome. If you've been listening all along, welcome back. We have a great show for you today. I'm sure it's the reason why most of you are here. We are talking to Zach Meadows, and most of you have probably heard by now, Zach killed the potential new Oklahoma typical whitetail. And so it has, you know, gone viral. It's blown up way bigger and way faster than Zach ever dreamed. So I reached out to Zach, and he was way more than willing to come on the show and get to tell the story from his point of view, you know, what actually happened in his own words. And so Zach, like I said, Zach was more than willing to come on, and I was so happy to have him. So it's a great interview. I'm not going to talk too much because I want to, you know, let Zach tell his story. I do want to, real quickly though, before we get into it, just kind of define a few terms that you're going to hear throughout the podcast that we don't do a very good job of kind of defining in the conversation. And so I want to go over a few quick things. I'm basically going to give you kind of the 2-minute Boone and Crockett rundown before we start throwing all these terms and numbers out there. So real quick, Boone and Crockett Club was established in 1887 by Theodore Roosevelt and George Bird, and they came up with a scoring system that they felt basically assess the health of an individual animal, and then kind of through that they could, you know, figure out the health of a population. So in theory, the higher that an animal scores on their system, more than likely, the healthier that animal is. So that's kind of where this all came from. A few key terms that you're going to hear are gross and net scores. The gross score is the total accumulated measurement of inches. So this is the score you hear assigned to like non-typical racks. It's just how many inches are there. But the net score, that was designed to kind of reward or penalize, depending on which side of it you're on, symmetry. And so how close is the left antler to being an exact match of the right antler? You know, length, mass, all that stuff. And so after you score the buck and get the total inches, you then have to deduct differences, basically. And so that gives you your net score. And net score is how they come up with the typical whitetail score. So another term you're going to hear is green score. The reason you keep seeing the term, you know, potential record online or, you know, social media, whatever, is because we are still dealing with a green score. And Boone and Crockett requires a 60-day drying period from the time the buck is killed. And we are still within that 60-day period. So that's why you're hearing the green score term thrown around, because we have yet to get that 60 days. So it's green score is the score you get before the 60-day drying period. After the 60 days, the buck can then be measured for its official score, and we will then know if it broke the record or where it places in the record books. And so we're still waiting for that official score to come out. So I just wanted to throw these terms out there real quick. Like I said, we didn't do a real great job of defining them within the podcast. So that's pretty much going to do it for me. I know you guys probably aren't here to listen to me ramble. And so I'm going to cut my intro nice and short. And so thank you guys for listening. Keep listening. Look me up on social media, Instagram and Facebook at Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast. And with that, here is my interview with Zach Meadows. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show today. And today I'm talking to Zach Meadows. How are you doing, Zach?
I'm alive.
You're alive.
You said alive and well.
Uh-huh. You said you're still kind of recovering from COVID. Is that right?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. Yeah, my whole family got it a few weeks ago. We didn't get too bad, but man, it wasn't fun by any means. But forgive me, my voice is a little hoarse, but I'll give it a whirl.
Oh, it's sounding great. Well, I think by the time this airs, I think most people might have heard your name and realize why you're on the podcast today, because you killed a stud of a buck. Was it November 3rd?
Yeah, November 3rd, the evening of November 3rd. So Yeah, just the wing gods smiled on us that day, and we were able to get in the stand we've been trying to for a while.
Awesome. Well, I got
been all over the place. Been kind of crazy past few days, I guess.
Yep. And we're gonna get into all that craziness here in a little bit, but you know, I think the best way to start this thing off is I think you should just, you know, tell everybody the story. And so, you know, I just want to hear about this buck. You know, did you have him in years past? Was it one you were looking for? Did he come out of nowhere? And I'm just gonna kind of hand you the reins for a minute, and I just want you to talk about him and tell us how it all went down.
Gotcha. So we got a picture actually with an old point and shoot Canon camera, not a trail camera, last year. Just kind of a weird freak deal. We hadn't seen him on any trail cameras, and I'm just out checking a few things, and he's just standing there out in the middle of a field, and just standing there watching us, and was able to get my camera out and take some pictures of him. And so that was the first time we saw him. It was in the right at the start of archery last year, and haven't really seen him since until probably about June. We got a couple trail cam pictures of him, and but just very, very little footage of him. And we had a couple other deer in the area that we were chasing, and we knew he was in the area, but you know, just very little film of him on the trail cameras or anything like that. So he was a stud last year. I mean, he was every bit as big as he was this year. We had no idea he was that big, but you know, we knew he was a good deer. So I've got four young boys, two of which are or just getting into hunting, and you know, so I was really hoping to get my 12-year-old on this deer or one of our other big ones. So we were actually fighting to see who would sit in that stand that night, and he was just a little nervous just because it was a little, you know, potentially a little further shot, and mm-hmm. and you know, his bow I think is still only, you know, 45 pounds or something, so a little on the light side. So I ended up going that night, and I wish he would have went. I think he could have got it done, but I think we ended up getting in the stand that night around 2 o'clock. I think it's before the time change, so about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And but it was just one of those nights where we were just seeing a ton of deer, and you know, the wind was good, and we actually had set this stand up, and kind of last year, I mean, we're learning every year, you know, I'm not a pro hunter by any means, and mm-hmm. you know, I've been hunting a long time, but you know, I think just constantly learning with these whitetails, and you know, last year we noticed a lot of the big bucks were circling, you know, downwind, and you know, we used to hunt a lot of corn feeders, and we've been getting away from that. You know, we wasted so much time hunting these corn feeders just because we saw so many deer and a lot of young women and children. And, you know, we thought it was a good hunt because we saw 20 deer, that's it, you know, but we just weren't seeing the big bucks. And, once we started getting off these corn feeders, and, you know, we went from running, you know, say 10 feeders down to 2, and very rarely even sit them anymore. And but anyways, it was just one of those nights where a lot of deer were coming in, and you know, there was a little pinch out where they, you know, would go from a crop field to the hardwoods, and it got kind of real skinny, so most of the deer had to pass through there. But we had a blocker, a big open field, where they, you know, if they wanted to circle downwind of us, they had to go out there in the open field, and you know, these big bucks just didn't want to do that. So it was we had that working for us. So, but we hadn't set the stand at all. Just been waiting on the right wind, and you know, I tried to set them all up for a north or south wind, but this particular one we needed I think it was like a northwest wind, and you know, right when those fronts kind of move through, you can usually get an east or a west, you know, but it's always north or south. But mm-hmm. it was just one of those nights where the winds was good, and we got in there early, and right off the bat, I was by myself, but right off the bat, we started seeing some smaller bucks and doe, and usually they just kind of pass through. It's kind of a staging area before they go on to the crops, so they're you know, it's not quite, you know, they're just kind of waiting for the sun to go down before they jump out onto the agriculture, the ag fields, and so they just seem to congregate here. And you know, it was getting to be, I think there were, you know, 6 doe around and about 3 little basket rack bucks, and it was just getting to where you just couldn't move, and I was just real worried one was going to get downwind of us and kind of mess the whole thing up. But we had this it's a big non-typical. We'd been watching on camera, and we had seen him several times, and we thought there was a good chance, you know, he would come in, and he came in right at 4 o'clock, and he's probably, you know, 180, 190 inch non-typical, you know, before all the deductions and everything, but really good size deer. It definitely would have been the biggest deer I'd ever killed in my life. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I knew if we shot him, I was done, and there would be no chance at getting this bigger one. So I actually texted my son, and I was like, I think we were calling him Junk. Mm-hmm. We had nicknamed that deer Junk. I was like, Junk's here, I'm going to shoot him. And he just said, don't do it. Don't do it. He's like, you're never going to get a chance at the big one if you do it. Mm-hmm. So I just couldn't believe I was passing this deer up, and it was killing me. My heart was already pounding.
Mm-hmm.
But so he was, you know, it's getting November 3rd, so they're just kind of chasing, not really, you know. Mm-hmm. They're splitting off from their bachelor groups. All the big bucks have all split off, you know. So it's not quite rut, but, you know, they're definitely checking some does, and nothing too serious yet. Mm-hmm. So this deer runs off and chasing some does and ends up coming back. And I just thought, I was like, I may never get another shot at this deer, much less a shot at this bigger deer. So I just couldn't believe I was passing this deer up. But, you know, I'm sitting there watching him, and he's probably right at 60 yards. And this big non-typical, and his whole body posture just changes, you know. He starts licking his lips, and I knew something was going on. So I was like, man, if something's scaring this guy, it's got to be a pretty big buck if this guy's getting, you know, nervous about something coming in. And so I'm looking, you know, just scanning with my binoculars, and I just see a rat coming, and I instantly knew it was this deer. And he comes in, and the deer, actually, when we saw him a year ago, he had a little limp on his front leg, but he wasn't like every step he was limping. Mm-hmm. He would run fine, but like every tenth step he would limp. And so I saw him kind of go down, and I knew it was him because I saw the limp. And but anyway, so they're it's pretty tight. It's a pretty tense standoff. So this non-typical we're watching, and this big buck, they see each other, and it's just like everything just stopped. All the doe quit running around. The little bucks, I think a couple of them ran off, and these two are just getting ready to go at it. And you know, they're cocking their head and their hair standing up, and they're licking their lips, and I'm like, man, this is getting ready to go down. And I'm just thinking they're about to have an epic battle right in front of me, and I'm wanting to videotape it, but I'm like, man, I gotta get ready. Mm-hmm. My heart is just pounding, and I mean, it was about to beat out of my chest. And I was like, man, I hope I can pull my bow back right now, because I was not in good shape. Mm-hmm. I thought the buck fever, you know, it kind of left me, you know, a few years back, but definitely not. It was worse than I've ever had. Mm-hmm. And but anyway, so they're staring at each other, and I can't get a shot yet. He's still a little ways away, and they're just literally staring down. And I hate to even say this on this podcast, but I've never heard this, I don't think, ever in the wild, but one of the little bucks farted as loud as I've ever heard, and they all scattered. and they all ran about 30, 40 yards and just stopped. And I was like, is this happening? I've hunted 20 years, and I don't think I've ever heard this in the wild. And I think everything was just so tense, and there wasn't hardly any wind that day, and it was quiet, and it just so the big buck ran off. He was gone. And the non-typical ended up running off, but he came back pretty quick. The does started coming back, and so I'm thinking to myself, a deer fart just ruined the buck of a lifetime for me. And I was like, what kind of luck, you know? And I'm actually getting ready to pull my phone out and text my son, and I was like, you're not going to believe what just happened. And I'd say about 10 minutes later, you know, I just kind of a repeat of what happened the first time. I could tell by the other buck's posture that he's coming in. And so this time the big one just wasn't messing around. He came straight in, and they they circled each other a little bit, and the big non-typical just didn't want any part of it this time, and he ran off, and they were right at 61 yards, and I mean, that's pretty far bow shot for me, and I knew my 60-yard pin was pretty good. I'd been practicing quite a bit, and just switched to a new bow this year, and I didn't have as much confidence as my old Matthews that I've had for, you know, 15 years that I've been shooting. So I've got a new bow, fancy new sight, and I just, you know, I've been practicing, just haven't killed a lot of deer with it. So I was like, now or never. And I mean, I was shaking so bad. It was pretty much all a blur, but ended up closing my eyes and just breathing. And he stopped broadside right at 60 yards. And I just was telling myself in my head that I'd always been shooting him right behind the shoulder, and I thought, you know, for years that was the best place to shoot him. And I think I'd been shooting him just too far back. Hmm. The year before I think I watched maybe one of the Meat Eater podcasts or something. And I just remembered, you know, lining that front leg up, just the back part of the front leg and straight up, which is a little further forward than I normally were shooting them. And that's what I did, and just let it fly. And had a mechanical broadhead, and I instantly knew it was a good hit, and he took off, and I about lost it. I texted my son, and he knew exactly. I mean, he knew something had happened, so I texted him. Was like, I just sent an arrow, and I think I got him, but I don't know. But anyways, I could look in my binoculars, and it was really weird. I could see the arrow almost sticking straight up and down in the ground, I could actually see it with my binoculars, and I could see the feathers were just red, so I knew it was a good hit. And how that happened, I don't know, but it was a clean pass through, so I knew, you know, I was pretty confident in the hit. I didn't hear him crash or anything, so that was probably the longest hour wait of my life. I think it was right around 5 o'clock when I shot him, or just after. So I still had plenty of daylight left, and there wasn't any rain coming in, and so my plan was to go get my arrow as quietly as I could and just back out. I knew I wouldn't sleep that night, but that was my plan, sitting there and just waiting for an hour. And I ended up seeing that other buck come back after I'd shot that one. But anyways, got some good footage of him. But right about an hour, I went down and got my arrow, and, you know, everything looked good. And then I started looking for blood, and there was just no blood. And I was like, man, this isn't good. And I actually had to get down on my hands and knees and start crawling around looking for blood. And it was just almost like a mist, just a really fine mist. I'm not sure if it was coming out of his nose or it just wasn't a typical blood trail that I was used to. And we got a lot of rain the day before, so everything was, you know, a little damp. So it wasn't the easiest, you know, to see the blood, but I could rub my hand on the bushes, and it was just coming back red. So I knew there was blood there, but it was just a big drop was about the size of a pencil eraser, and it was just really hard to see. But I thought, well, I may just go 20 yards down this trail. That's all I'm going to do. Just as silent as I can. You know, I've got to know, you know, what I'm dealing with tonight, or I'm going to be up all night. So I crawled just as quietly as I could on my hands and knees, and the blood just stayed about the same. It just wasn't a good blood trail, and I was really getting worried. And um, And then I look around the corner, and I could see his racks just sticking up. And he didn't go 20, 25 yards. So, but anyways, yeah, it was just an amazing deal, and it's probably the farthest shot I've ever taken on with my bow to date. And but yeah, really, really lucky it all worked out. And yeah, crazy hunt.
Yeah,
I know I'm leaving some stuff out. But
no, I think you did great.
But anyways, I FaceTimed my son and you know, and just said, I can't find him, and you know, I kind of moved the phone over my shoulder where I know he can kind of see him in the background, and I was like, I think he got away. We just can't find any blood, and finally he notices the rack just sitting there on the ground, and I think he was more excited than I was, but yeah, and then we got him out of there and started taking some pictures, and you know, I still had no idea. In my mind, we had the few trail cam pictures we had of him. You know, I'm thinking high 180s, you know, maybe, you know, 180, maybe 190. And, and I'd showed him to, you know, a few guys that are a lot more experienced in scoring deer than I am. And, you know, they were all pretty confident that it was pushing 200. Mm-hmm. And, one of my son's, football coaches, has shot the number two, non-typical in the state. So he was, you know, a lot better versed in that than I was. But anyways, these guys I was showing the pictures to, thought he was, you know, he would go over 200, and I just never in a million years thought that he would get even close to that. So, we ended up checking him in and getting everything legal and taking him to the processor, and we're able to get some good photos. I wish we could have got some better photos, but it was getting dark, let me back up. The processor was closed by the time we got him checked in, got him gutted, and they have an honor drop freezer where you can bring them, you know, after hours. There's no lock on it or anything, and so I was taking him to the processor, and I got to thinking, I was like, man, I just don't know how I feel about leaving the deer.
I would not be leaving it. Nope.
in an unlocked freezer. So, so I ended up taking him home to my house, and ended up hanging him in a tree in my backyard, and it really good. I got to show all my kids and my wife, and my wife was probably definitely a widow that whole archery season. We were spending time in the woods a lot. I mean, just every chance we got a good wind, and it's really good having kids that like to hunt, because I could always use that as an excuse.
Right.
You know, I'm taking the kids hunting, I'm not even sitting in the stand. I'm just taking them, you know, and then I would get a sneak off, but yeah, it was really cool. I got the opportunity to show them, and all my boys were just pumped. And the next morning, me and my dad actually took him to the meat processor, and I said, hey, you got a little soft tape measure, you know, like go steal it out of mom's sewing kit. Mm-hmm. And so I'd never really scored a deer. I've attempted it in the past, but we downloaded an app that kind of walked us through the scoring. I'm sure we made a ton of mistakes, but we did it real quick right there, before the, hanging there at the meat processor. But anyway, we were right around 200, and I immediately thought we screwed up. And so I'm Googling, you know, state record, you know, Oklahoma record deer, and I think it was, you know, I see like a 196 and the 194, and I'm like, we definitely screwed up, you know, and so ended up vacated him out, man. That morning, the next morning, they already had him caped out, and by that time, you know, I had texted probably a dozen of my buddies who had texted a dozen of their buddies, and then, man, this monster had just snowballed. Yeah. And
I was about to say, it seems like when the hunt ended, that's where the craziness really started.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just, you know, and then I think the wildlife department got wind of it, and, you know, so they're definitely interested to see, you know, if and people start throwing around new state record, and I'm like, you know, hey, don't, not off my scoring. And
yeah.
So we ended up taking it to a taxidermist there, and they had a couple SCI, certified SCI scores, I believe, or one guy was, and then a Boone and Crockett or previous Boone and Crockett score. These guys knew what they were doing, and, I mean, you could tell they took just a few measurements of one side and automatically knew that it was going to be right around 200 inches. That's how much experience these guys had. And, so they went right in, and, you know, and I'm watching them. I'm just kind of standing back, taking some pictures, and I think they're done. And I see, you know, 186 right there on the page. And I was like, wow, that's exactly what I thought he was going to score. Mm-hmm. And they said, We're not even close to done. We hadn't done the inside spread, and, you know. So right then I knew. I was like, oh, man. I'm trying to, you know, thinking this may be actually bigger than I thought. But, yeah, I was happy with that 186, but they definitely weren't done. I think one guy came up with, you know, around 205, I think, and after the deductions. And he just had so much mass and carried it out, you know, pretty far. But, you know, I was blown away. And now I'm thinking that, you know, that this actually could be a state record deer. And, you know, the area I hunt has never, you know, it's you know, we consistently get some 140s and, you know, 150s. And that's been a ton of work just to get there. Mm-hmm. And it's just nothing I had ever thought about, you know, saying, hey, that could never happen to me. You know, that happens up northwest Oklahoma with these, you know, these guys paying, you know, crazy money for these, you know, Kansas bordered leases. And, you know, just to think that could happen in Logan County, pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that's kind of where we stand. You know, that it's got to dry for 60 days. And, you know, I think that puts it, if my math is right, right around New Year's.
Yep.
And, I talked with the wildlife department, and, they had mentioned, I think the director, the assistant director or somebody at the wildlife department's a certified Boone and Crockett scorer. But, you know, they had mentioned, possibly a committee, scoring them, and I've never heard of that. I think they had some issues with some of the past scores. I'm not too sure exactly what all happened, but I think some of the I don't know any particular deer, but I heard some of them were being overscored, so they just wanted to make sure that you know, that everybody was in agreement. There was, you know, so that, yeah, that puts it right around New Year's. So we're just kind of waiting. And then, you know, I didn't realize all the rules, with Boone and Crockett. So I'm just reading them and you know, making sure we, you know, don't put anything on the antlers, and
right,
it's, not in a cooler in a room temperature. So, you know, I was really worried, you know, just want to make sure we do it the right way. And you know, it's going to shrink, you know, so, but, you know, we'll see what happens when they, you know, when it dries, yeah. But hopefully it doesn't shrink that much. But
yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, just for our audience, I was going to specify that, you know, like, you know, basically all these numbers we're talking about, and, you know, if you see articles on the internet or whatever, they're all going to say potential, you know, potential state record. And the reason it hasn't been officially done or whatever is because, yeah, Boone and Crockett requires a 60-day drying period. And so, you know, any number that anybody comes up with right now will not be official. And so that's why there's so much, you know, potential mm-hmm. around this buck. So,
do you know what they typically lose during that dry? I mean, I've been... It's just not a whole lot. I mean, I am anywhere just from my Google searches mm-hmm. anywhere from, you know, two to, you know, upwards of 10, 12 inches. So mm-hmm. I didn't know if there's like a percentage that they, if yeah. you knew, like, you know, what percentage they typically lose over that.
Yeah.
Drying time. Or...
I've heard some stuff on that. I've heard people talk about it. And it seems like every deer is different. Yeah. I've heard some not shrinking at all. I've heard some losing 10 inches. I think on average, it's not that much, you know, maybe somewhere in the 2 to 5 inches on a, you know, a big deer like this. So yeah, I don't think you got to worry about too much shrinkage. So,
yeah, one of the guys had mentioned the inside spread mm-hmm. is one of the things that it really, I don't know if it's a skull cap shrinking or what, mm-hmm. but the inside spread is what really, really will shrink down on them more than mm-hmm. anything.
Yeah.
And, I guess in the past, you know, and I'm just learning all this for the first time, you know, I've never had to worry about this
yeah.
In the past, but I guess guys would put a piece of lumber in between the the rack.
Try to
yeah,
keep it out.
Yeah. Yeah, it would just keep it from from shrinking.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that, you know, that a lot of the past you know, deer had been done like that, but mm-hmm. I think Boone and Crockett's really caught wind of that. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I've heard it all now, mm-hmm. but it sounds like that's definitely not legal now.
Right.
So we're definitely going to do it the right way and mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and see what happens. But hopefully it doesn't shrink that much. And mm-hmm. I think. When they, you know, they said they scored it a little conservatively, so I'm uh-huh. I'm hoping, you know, that 205 number is a pretty conservative number.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Now that but, and that you said that 205, that's before deductions, so that'd be gross score.
No, that's after deductions.
Oh, that's
yeah,
after.
That was,
okay.
That was,
wow.
Yeah, that was after deductions, and
okay.
I don't know if they you know if it was. It was, I know they deducted like the main kickers and mm-hmm. stuff like that. I don't know if the beam circumference deductions, I don't mm-hmm. know if all that was done, but
yeah,
but I know all the main deductions, but
gotcha.
Yeah, they call that the green score. It wasn't mm-hmm. the gross, but yeah, he was
yeah.
up
net.
I want to say around, yeah, that was net. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It was around 205 net. And,
yeah.
And I think the taxidermist actually rescored him. You know, I saw on the Facebook on their Facebook a post. They actually had him as 210,
mm-hmm.
A conservative 210.
Yeah.
But I wasn't present for that one, so
gotcha.
I'm just
okay.
Just been saying what I was there for, but
yeah,
But yeah, who knows? But
mm-hmm.
what was crazy? So I mentioned he had a limp and. So we got to look at one of his front hooves. It was the weirdest thing, you know. They, you know, usually have two pads, you know,
mm-hmm.
a pad on either side, you know. But he was missing almost, I'd say, 80% of one of his hoof or one of his pads.
Uh-huh.
And one of the scorers said that they could usually tell which leg had an injury. They said that typically the opposite mm-hmm. antler will suffer.
Uh-huh.
You know, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but it sounded like he knew what he was talking about. But, yeah, they were really surprised with a foot like that, that mm-hmm. the deer was able to maintain, you know, that much mass. And,
mm-hmm.
and it looked like he'd been dealing with the injury for a long time, but, I don't know if it was from an arrow or,
mm-hmm.
or you know, a piece of wire or what it was, but
yeah.
he definitely had a major injury to his foot, and you know, I think some of the tracks we saw in the in the mud that just didn't make any sense. But yeah, you know, it's just crazy coming. It was a plot of land we had. Is definitely nothing special. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not an everyday occurrence for us by any means.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
But yeah, it when we first started hunting this place, like, you know, I was 16. I guess I'm 43. Yeah. But anyways, I started hunting this when I was 16, and just to see a buck back then was, you know, was a big deal. Mm-hmm. Or even, you know, there were, you know, several, you know, stretches we'd go not see a deer. Mm-hmm. And, so it's come a long way, and, mm-hmm. and you know, the past 5 years, you know, all the neighbors and you know, we've got some really good neighbors and really good guys that hunt around us, and everybody finally got on the same page, and mm-hmm. we started sharing our pictures and bouncing ages off, you know, and actually starting to pass up these deer. And you know, the problem was, you know, years back we'd pass on a really good deer, but we'd just never see it again.
Yeah.
You know, so it just got really hard to pass on these 130-inch deer when that's as big as you're seeing, and you don't see them again the next year, and you're like, it just made it tough. But but once all the neighbors got on the same page, and we really started, you know, seeing that freak 170 or, you know, even 160, and then every year we started seeing, you know, instead of one nocturnal 160, you know, we'd see two. It just slowly started, started getting better. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we messed around with the food plots a little bit. The soil's not the best out there. It just mm-hmm. requires a lot of fertilizer and a lot of lime, and it's just expensive to plant. You know, we started with some little food plots, and the deer would just hammer it before it would get a chance to come up.
Mm-hmm.
So, we finally got some food plots going and started getting, you know, some nutrition in. And, you know, I was always wondering, you know, how much of it was nutrition. And, you know, I always thought it was genetics for the longest time. And, you know, that we just don't have the genetics out here to produce a deer like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the more I've researched, I think Meat Eater just had a really good podcast on genetics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not it's definitely not as much as they thought, you know.
Right.
It's more with the doe mm-hmm. than it is with the buck. Yep. And, you know, if the doe has twins, from what I recall, you can pretty much write those, not write them off, but mm-hmm. the chances of those, you know, say she has twin bucks, mm-hmm. and the chances of those bucks being anything special is pretty slim. And I guess it's just the nutrition, you know, all going to one deer, you know, and
more
having to share the milk and the
mm-hmm.
and the food with another one, it just...
Yeah. It's more about what's in the ground than what's above it. The soil, you know, like you said, the soil and the nutrition and everything like that. So.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, I know genetics play a part, but, mm-hmm. you know, it just goes to show that, you know, even with, here in central Oklahoma, you know, we're, you know, it's pretty rare to see these deer with some decent management and some summer food plots and some selective doe management. I mean, you can, you know, grow, you know, 180 inch deer. I mean, mm-hmm. we, like I said, you know, 20 years ago, a 130 would have been a monster on this place we hunt. I mean, mm-hmm. it was just, we just didn't see them.
Yeah.
And I don't think it takes that long to do it, but I think mm-hmm. it just took that long for us to learn, you know, not to let them walk,
yeah.
you know, and it, mm-hmm. it was just, just so hard when they ran over to your neighbors and got shot, you know. Yeah. So it made it tough letting them walk when you knew they weren't going to make it till next year. But but yeah, getting everybody else around us on board and you know, some of the farmers planting some agriculture around us, you know, definitely helped. But you know, the biggest thing that we learned is just staying out of there. And you know, we used to think a successful hunt, you know, we'd see sometimes 20 deer a night, but they were all women and children. And we just weren't seeing those big bucks, and we were constantly in there checking trail cameras and filling feeders and, you know, sitting on corn feeders. And it was just really, really hard to get off the corn feeders. And but man, one year I just got so busy with work and I just couldn't, I just didn't have time to jack with the feeders. And I swear that year I saw more big bucks than I'd seen in a long time, because it, you know, it forced me to get out and hunt other places. And just staying out of there and not riding a four wheeler, you know, a quarter mile from the stand. And, you know, it's hard when it's, you know, when you're coming from work and you're short on time and the sun's going down, and, but just not hunting those days. And, and if the wind's questionable, and, you know, I think a couple of years ago between me and my son, you know, we were hunting sometimes three days a week. And, I mean, those deer knew where we were. They had us patterned, and they knew not to go there. And we were seeing the same doe, the same, you know, yearlings ever hunt. And, you know, we started staying out of there, and the camera, you know, we started getting, you know, deer in the daylight, big deer in the daylight, which is something that was really rare in the past. And, you know, we still have some stands this year we haven't hunted, and we've got some monster deer on there, but the wind just hasn't been perfect. So we've been staying out of there, and I like getting out, you know, whether we see anything or not, you know, it's just fun to get out. But for just quality deer, just, you know, I used to think more was better. You know, the more time I spent in the woods, the better chance I had at killing a big deer. And man, I think it's the exact opposite. It's just staying out and watching your scent when you're walking in, and you know, getting blockers, whether it's an open field, a river, a pond, or, you know, something where those deer can't circle downwind, especially if you're hunting corn feeders. I really think those bucks, you know, half the time I don't even think they come to them. I think they come downwind and just kind of check what's on them, especially during rut. And but yeah, having a blocker where they can't come downwind of you seems to, you know, be really helpful. But all the no scent and all that, you know, all the prep, and man, I don't think anything really works, at least in my experience. If you know, if they're coming in downwind, they're gonna get you.
Yeah.
So it may help, but it hasn't worked for me. So
yeah.
But yeah, that's it in a nutshell, man. It was been a crazy, now all the fun's beginning. It you know, I don't know how. Just, I guess one thing, you know, for everybody to think of, you know, when if you shoot a big deer, and so this is something I haven't thought of, and a guy, you know, I learned from a past guy's mistake, a buddy of mine, is your location services on your iPhone. And I had no idea whether mine were on or off. And I guess when you text those pictures out to all your buddies, and they text them out to all their buddies, I mean, not only can they see where you killed it, I mean, they can see almost the tree where you shot it out of. So, yeah, make sure your location services are turned off.
Yeah, and, I was about to make a transition, you know, to talk about this type of thing. And yeah, you mentioned that earlier, and that's definitely something that, which I usually have mine off anyway, because I don't know, if I'm sure the government can still tell where I am anyway, but but I definitely have mine off. And yeah, right. I was going to ask, you know, that's a great tip, but, you know, coming from someone who, you know, like we said, might have just shot a state record, I've heard other people talk about it. I remember reading an article years and years ago about kind of what to do, you know, if you do shoot, you know, maybe a state record, world record, whatever. Yeah, like, did you learn, you know, like, your buck was on Yahoo News today, like you said, and it's been in the paper, it's been all over the place.
It's just crazy.
Yeah, you know, like, let's say you could rewind time back to the moment you shot that buck. Is there anything you would have done differently? You know, like, you know, taking more pictures or called the game warden out there, or, you know, that type of thing. Is there stuff you would have done differently now that you've kind of been through it?
Man, yeah. I mean, I just didn't think it was, you know, in my mind, it's a big 180, you know, it's probably going to make Boone and Crockett, but I had no idea. If I would have known, I would have done everything different, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, we've already, you know, already getting some calls on the landowners around have been getting calls, you know, from the you know, the Dallas guys, you know, that whole Texas bunch is you know, how they found out about it, I don't know, but yeah, this morning on my way to work at 6 a.m., my phone just starts blowing up, and you know, the guy sent me a text and said, just type Yahoo.com, and it's the big trial that's going on, and then right below it is a picture of me and my deer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, on Yahoo. I'm like, how does that happen?
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely would have done things different, you know, and, you know, I got guys, you know, I started reading all the comments on the bow hunter forums, and, you know, the guy, 10 miles away, you know, had that deer on his trail cam, you know, he's not saying I poached it off his land, but he doesn't know. He, you know, that deer disappeared now.
Yeah.
You know, and you're always going to have those guys that say they had that deer on trail cam. And that deer has been about 50 miles all over the place on everybody's trail cam. But, but no, it's been, overall, it's been pretty positive. It's just, you know, I just definitely didn't want the publicity or anything like that, you know, and I understand the wildlife department. It's a good deal for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure it brings in, you know, some out of state hunters and stuff like that. But, you know, they've been nothing but helpful. You know, like the day, the paper, the big paper called, I think the day after I shot it, and wanted to do an interview, and you know, they can pretty much whether you want to it in the paper or not, I mean, they're going to put it in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, they can get the pictures off social media, so you really once you text them out to your, you know, your dozen deer hunting buddies, and they text them out, you know, what was really crazy, I was at my son's football practice, and one of the dads, you know, we're sitting in the stands watching them. This is the day after, I think the day after I shot the deer, and he gets a text from a guy in, I don't know, I think like Antlers, Oklahoma or something, guy way far away, and texted him a picture of this, look at this deer this guy killed, and I'm sitting right next to him, you know, and I knew I was in trouble then, you know, and it was, but yeah, you know, I would have preferred it stay a little, you know, lower key, and we don't know, it may not be the state record, you know, and that's another thing. I don't want to look like an idiot if it shrinks 10 inches or it's not, you know, like I said, I didn't score it. You know, I did my attempt at scoring it, but that definitely isn't anything official. So, but we'll see what happens. But,
yeah. Well, it sounds like you have a great attitude about the whole thing, which is awesome. You know, it's nice to hear that you're just a normal, average, down-home guy. You know, you're definitely not seeking attention by any means. And so, you know, I hope it works out for you, but it sounds like you're going to be okay if it doesn't work out too. And, I think that's what everybody wants out of the person who shoots a state record. You know, they want them to be that humble guy and not that big flashy looking for attention guy.
No, it's definitely, definitely a lot of, you know, I don't mind doing like some local podcasts like with you and stuff like that, just to, you know, get the story out of there. It's already been all over the place. But yeah, I guess if I had to do it over again, I definitely would have kept it a little lower key. It just, social media, it just blows up and it just takes the, you know, somebody puts it on one bow hunting forum and then the next thing you know, it goes viral, you know, and pretty crazy, you know. And there's, you know, one of my buddies told me that, you know, he's been down this road before. He's like, man, you got to have some thick skin. And I had no idea what he was talking about. I was like, why would I need, you know, thick skin? You know, I just shot a deer, you know. But, yeah, I guess there's a lot of good and a lot of bad. There's a lot of people out there, you know, that you just look back on all these bucks and that have been shot and, you know, people, there's always a controversy with them, you know, it seems like, he poached it or it was a high fence deer.
I was going to say, that's the one you always like see. That. There's always a dozen comments of high fence.
Yeah, this is about as far from it as you could get, believe me. But yeah, you know, there's been a lot of that. I just, you know, quit reading the comments and we'll see what happens and hopefully it is. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'd love to have the state record typical buck, but if it's not and there's a good chance that it may not be, then I definitely going to be the biggest buck of my lifetime for sure it's been neat for my kids to see it. Biggest regret, I just wish I wish my 12-year-old would have gotten him and not me. Mm-hmm. And I think he could have done it, you know. And he shot a really big one during youth rifle. Mm-hmm. And he's just now getting, you know, to where he can pull the bow back to where I feel comfortable. You know, he's not just going to wound something. So I don't know. It would have been a tough 60-61 yards on a 45-pound bow. Mm-hmm. It would have been, you know, the arrow drop on that, just a ton.
Yeah.
And you're off, you know, misjudged just a little bit, you know, and it could have wounded him, and that would have been about the worst thing that could have happened. But, luckily. I'm just surprised I was able to make it. That's definitely the farthest I've shot a deer and shaken like that. And we've gotten my whole family got COVID, you know, and I was, but man, it hit me hard. My lungs were jacked up and, you know, so I was trying to get out and get some fresh air and get moving and they definitely weren't in the best of shape, but, that combined with some buck fever like I've never had before, and man, it was a adrenaline dump for sure. After it was all over, man, it just felt like I'd been been run over. But I think the deer weighed Bill Jeff. So it wasn't a huge deer. It was right around 200 pounds, if I remember right, when they weighed him. So not a huge body deer, and I think. You know, so when I saw him last year, we were thinking he was about 4 years old. Judging, they looked at the teeth and they think he's around 7.
Wow.
So it'll give everybody an age. You know, who knows? I don't know if they're going to pull a jawbone on him and actually get an age. But, you know, 6-7, I think, you know, he definitely, kind of weird. He had a lot of ticks on him, more than, you know, typically out here. A lot of these deer, at least the ones we've shot in the past, they've got a few, but nothing crazy. So I don't know if that's because he had that injury and been laying up a little more, or if he was just bedding in thicker woods, or mm-hmm. or what. But we definitely noticed a lot more ticks on him than normal, and kind of did a number on the all the cape
mm-hmm.
And spots of the cape. So, yeah.
Well, cool.
Amazing. It's all been a blur.
I know it. I bet it has.
But I think January 2nd, I think, is when, if my math was right, I think that's mm-hmm. when the 60-day mark will be up. And mm-hmm. so we're going to try to pick him up and get him scored, and we'll see what happens. And then I think tradition is that you take him to the backwoods show,
uh-huh.
I guess.
Uh-huh.
Everybody's been calling about the backwoods show, you know, and putting him up at different booths and, mm-hmm. you know, I haven't been to the backwoods show in a while, but mm-hmm. I used to go when I was younger a lot, hopefully everybody will get a chance to see him regardless, you know,
mm-hmm.
so it's a really, really cool, rack.
Yeah.
Really cool deer.
Uh-huh. Awesome. Awesome, man. That's cool.
But yeah,
like
man.
Like I said, I'm glad you got a chance to come on here, and you know, hopefully people will trust this story come straight out of your mouth more than Yahoo News. And I think it's great, and I'm glad you were willing to come on and share it with everybody.
Yeah, man. I'm glad I could, man. I definitely like to keep it local, and mm-hmm. I appreciate you calling, man. It's mm-hmm. been awesome.
Of course.
My 15 minutes of fame.
It might last longer than 15 minutes. Who knows?
Hopefully not. Hopefully yeah. not. All right, man.
Uh-huh. Yeah, like I said, I appreciate you coming on, and you're definitely going to have to keep me posted, you know, if it does break it, or even if it doesn't, maybe we'll have to have you on for a quick little 10-minute rundown or something like that come this January.
Yeah, at least, I mean, yeah, it's definitely been a learning experience, and mm-hmm. I'm learning more about scoring deer and, you know, the typical versus the non-typical, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think you ought to get extra credit for the, you know, for the kickers and stuff.
Instead of negative.
That, you know?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that ought to be extra credit. But yeah, it's, you know, pretty crazy. I guess the non you know, I guess it's just part of it. You
uh-huh.
know, I guess some deer score better as a non-typical,
mm-hmm.
and you know, some score better as a typical.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
But yeah, I guess mm-hmm. this is part of it with the yep. deductions and the drying and,
mm-hmm.
and, but we'll see what happens. Hopefully it is, but,
yep.
but, if it's not, it was an awesome hunt.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Awesome, man. Well, yeah, great story, great buck. And, I can't wait to see how it turns out.
Yeah. I'm just glad my wife didn't divorce me during this whole thing. She's definitely been taking four kids to football and jujitsu and soccer practice, and I'm out sitting in a tree. So luckily she let me. She's gonna kill me if I come on here and don't mention her.
So, I'm glad you did.
But yeah, I'm glad she let me do it. So, but yeah, I appreciate
awesome.
It, man.
Yes, sir. Well, I appreciate it, and thanks for coming on.
Yes, sir. I'll talk to you on the second, and we'll see what happens.
All righty. Sounds good.
All right. See ya.
Thanks for coming on, Zach. A big shout out to you. I'm keeping my fingers crossed for you, and I can't wait to see how it turns out. So thank you, Zach, for coming on. Thank you guys for listening. If this is your first time listening to the show, welcome. Like I said, keep checking it out. Talk a lot about deer hunting, talk about basically everything outdoor Oklahoma. We've got fishing episodes, we've got turkey episodes, got some duck episodes coming down the pipe. You get to hear my crazy, weird, wild stories. I've spent this last weekend in West Texas hunting whitetail out there. I personally did not kill one. Another guy did. Saw some great bucks, had some close encounters. I am chasing a nice buck in Oklahoma. Going to be after him this coming weekend. We got a nice little cold front coming in on Friday, so I'm definitely going to be out there. He is driving me nuts. He is all over the place. I have had him on 5 different cameras over the last 6 days. 2 of the cameras are 1.1 miles apart, And it's not like he was on one camera and then several days later on the other camera and that's it. I'm talking like he's on one camera, 2 days later he's on the far camera, 2 days later he's back. He's just going all over the place, and he is driving me crazy in the process. So yeah, you're going to have to come back and hear how that works out. Thank you guys again for listening to this. Like I said, look me up on Instagram and Facebook at Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast, and that is going to do it for this episode. So thank you guys for tuning in, and I will talk to you guys later.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.